stocks, bonds, ETFs, straight out of downtown Chicago. This is Zach's Market Edge.
Welcome to Zach's Market Edge, the podcast about investing in your life. I'm your host, Tracy Reinick, and this week I'm joined by Zach's chief equity strategist, John Blank, to talk about what else, the economy, and what's going on out there. We normally talk about, is there a recession? Is one imminent? We've been covering that for a couple of years here on the podcast, but it doesn't appear that one is imminent. So I don't think we're going to cover it as much as we normally do, but we are going to talk about that. But we're going to look at a couple of other issues. You know, everybody's still concerned about inflation. We have gold running. We have a upturn in crude again. We have doubts about whether or not the Fed is even going to cut now in 2024. That's a first. So I'm welcoming John back because the last time he was here, I think it was in 2023, the end of 2023. So a lot has changed, or has it, since he was last on. So welcome, John.
Tracy, good to be back.
Yeah. So let's start with our usual, are we in a recession? Because I think we all know the answer to that, and it's no, we aren't. And what is going on with this jobless, you know, the jobs data in general? It still looks good on the surface, but a lot of people are, you know, deep diving into the BLS reports. They're not doing it so much into the weekly claims because those still look good. There's not a lot you can dispute there, but I'm hearing some people even trying to dispute the weekly claims. And just for people who aren't as familiar, the weekly jobless claims are the week prior, and those are taken from states' data. So when someone goes to file a claim for unemployment insurance, that is the initial claims data. And then there's also the continuing claims, which is if that person is still getting their unemployment insurance in the next, you know, couple of weeks or months after they first file. So that's all pretty much just driven by the data. Now, we have had some issues with the data over the years. So you can say, oh, but the data can be flawed. And recently, there's been a bunch of fraud on the unemployment insurance claims. Strangely enough, in Massachusetts in 2023, there was a bunch of fraudulent claims filed. It was like 10,000 extra claims were filed. The state did catch it, and they had to revise their numbers for that month. There's been a couple of other weird state instances like this, but pretty much, if you're filing for unemployment, that's going to get captured by the state. And we've had a lot of layoff announcements here in 2024, a little bit under what happened to start 2023, but still an elevated number of announcements. And so people are confused, myself included. Why is this not showing up in the unemployment, the weekly claims? Why are those people who are getting laid off not filing for unemployment? Or are they able to get a job right away? These are all the things that are kind of swirling out there. So, John, is the job market as good as it seems?
Well, first of all, let's do the federal non-farm payroll game. I'll just read it for you. Total non-farm payroll employment rose by 303,000 in March, and the unemployment rate changed little at 3.8%. And like I said, let's go to the revisions. Total revisions for January and February combined were 22,000 higher than previously purported. So they basically were a little better. Now it's 256 and 270. So 256, 270, and 303, Tracy, over 3 months. That's a rolling average, somewhere in the high 280s. That speaks for itself. Now, to your point about layoffs, I did that this morning, and layoffs and discharges were at 1.72 million in February versus 1.59 million in January. So we had 130,000 additional layoffs, which when you do typically 1.6, this is 7 or 8% rise. So it did happen. There was a bump up in layoffs and discharges. I would just explain to people that it's seasonal because of the calendar year and fiscal year, and a lot of CFOs work out on these types of things. So people just lay people off after bonuses and other things. So everything else that I look at, total non-farm quits, basically a little higher, 3.48 versus 3.45. And really not a lot of job openings change. I've got 8.76 in February versus 8.75 in January. So the basic point here is job openings, when you're running close to 9 million, when you used to run close to 7 million, is we still have 2 million open jobs because of retirements, people not wanting to work in the positions that are available, mismatches, whatnot. So job openings is telling you that soft landing should be your number one bet because they can work through another 2 million jobs. Now, let's go back to what I talked about earlier, three-month rolling average of 370,000 to 80,000 a month. You got to roll over on that and burn through 8-10 months at minus 200,000 to get rid of that. Not going to happen.
Right. So what's the incentive for the Fed to start cutting then? Why can't they just stay where they're at?
Yeah, let's talk about what Goldman Sachs put up. They said, you know, their GDP forecast is 2.5, which is well above consensus at 1.6, and only moderately above their potential GDP of 2.1. So what's going on here is the supply side potential of the economy, they write, is growing faster than usual. A lot of it's the elevated immigration, right? I mean, you read a lot about the immigration issue. Yes, it is, you know, in their data, mostly illegal immigration that's higher. But I would remind people, this is to be expected when you shut all immigration down because of COVID for 2 years. So, again, this may be a version of a supply shock, just like the non-farm job openings, 2 million, because people retired out of the, you know, COVID payoffs and, you know, house appreciation and wealth appreciation in the stock market. The other thing that happened is people are finally arriving in droves after they can. So it's another payback, you know, feedback, just like everything else you hear. You hear about the higher number of cruise ships. You hear about the higher number of job openings, but you should also include a higher level of illegal immigration because it's incentive driven, right? People are looking to the better jobs in the higher growth areas, that's the United States, and they're moving because they finally can, and they're getting around things to do it.
Yeah.
The other thing I would point out is illegal immigration, you know, we get a lot of think about it in terms of borders and, you know, Mexico and things like that, certainly appropriate, but you can also get on a plane from Ireland and get off in Chicago and hang out for a few years.
For sure.
Right?
This has been happening for a long time. I think something like 30% of all people in the country who've overstayed a visa or here not legally actually flew in. So,
right. They actually flew in. Then you just go, all you do is you drive up to Toronto or Ottawa and fly home.
Right.
And, you know, you just buy a bus ticket or you fly up there and then head home. I mean, I don't know, you know, again, I think people got to be really careful in front of an election to appraise the economy from all these perspectives because there's so much media hype and hyperbolic hype, and, you know, trying to spin and twist, whether it's local, state, or national elections, there's going to be a lot of this going on.
Yeah. What do you think about some of the like subsectors that appear to be turning around now? So housing looks like it's coming out of a 2-year doldrums, at least on the home builder side. And then manufacturing. We had an ISM for manufacturing back above 50 for the first time in 17 months. It's only 1 month. So it's not the trend yet, but it's going in the right direction, which is out of the contraction. Can those two kind of more niche areas of the economy be some kind of catalyst for it in the second half of this year?
Absolutely. Now, again, I'll quote stuff I pulled up this morning. The JP Morgan Global Manufacturing PMI posted 50.6 in March, up from 50.3 in February, and the highest reading since July of 22.
Okay. Wow.
That's almost 2 years. Now, let's get into the countries. India, once again, led output growth, but then we followed it with Greece, Indonesia, Russia, Russia output growth, yes, I said it, and Brazil, right? And but here's another interesting one. Growth accelerated to 22 and 10-month highs in the U.S. and China, respectively. So to your point, the 22-month high in U.S. is tied to a 10-month high in China, and led by Russia, Brazil, and India. So basically all the big countries are doing just fine, including Russia under sanctions.
Right. Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, and the other thing I'm talking about is, you know, how the oil markets are being elevated by the need for Russia to make money off their oil. They're selling it to China and whoever else wants it.
Okay, so if you're an investor now, we're in the midst of this huge rally. When I last talked with you, we were in the beginning of it, basically, in December. It's kept going. The valuations of the S&P 500 are more stretched now. I think it's at about 22 times based on first quarter earnings that are coming out shortly. Where do you invest? The large caps have been it. Like, it's been just huge with some of the large caps. You run the large cap trader portfolio here at Saks. And so do you think that that is the area that's going to keep, you know, staying hot, even if we're coming out of whatever it was that we were in the last year or so? Or should I be, you know, looking at some small caps? I know everybody's been hot to trot about the small caps for 2024, but we're already in April and it's just not happening.
I think, you know, the small cap trade, I was looking this morning about what really catalyzed it. It'll be probably a rate cut. You know, get a risk on move out of rate cutting, we'll pick the small cap. So people are probably getting in front of the small cap move. The other thing I would tell you, you know, building and construction materials are really hot right now. You saw that in the non-farm pay report with construction leading employment. And I see it in the Zacks heat maps. And I've been playing, you know, Owens Corning and, you know, stuff like that for a good length of time here. Works really good. You know, insulation maker kind of thing. And that plays into everything you've got in front of you. You got low inventories in housing in a lot of markets, not Florida, of course, but other ones. And people needing the demand and, you know, using these building materials probably to keep what they have or build something new.
Yeah, I pulled up the price and consensus chart for Owens Corning. I don't think I've ever said the word Owens Corning on a podcast before. And we've been doing it for a lot of years. So this does tell you that there's a new group of stocks maybe that investors need to be looking at. And look at this chart. So it is busting out to new five-year highs. You can see those earnings estimates are on the rise there for both 2024 and 2025.
Yeah, that's it. There you see it. And look where it started, Tracy, last June, right?
Yeah.
When a big rise came for 24 and 5. So sometime in the middle of last year, once the inflation bugaboo got put to bed at least a little bit, and the interest rates started to fall, that took the housing market back in play, and a lot of people on the insulation markets loaded up. So yeah, again, the same story in all these markets. You know, I got in this trade along a few months ago and it's been working for me. Now we're back at these fair value 2025, that's the brown line, 2025. And this is a real problem right now. I mean, in every chart that I look at, and it looks solid like this, your fair value on next year's earnings, not this year's earnings. So that's just a fully priced in market. The only way, you know, that's kind of interesting as the time rolls on, we're already in April, but by June or July, the way this works and you get all the you know, people talking about declining double-digit revisions, going to single digits and stuff, is all of a sudden the market looks at 2026 and they just push it out another year.
Okay.
Yeah, so the next thing that's going to happen in this chart is the brown line is going to become the blue line and we're going to get 26 to be the new brown line.
Right.
And that'll happen like 3-4 months from now. So I've learned this. I just write the strategy report. I had to put all kinds of 2026 data into play because that's how markets work. You're thinking they're forward looking, they certainly are, and then they they tick off time more than you, quicker than you think, and you get halfway through a year quicker than you think.
Yeah. What do you think about a stock like United Rentals? You were just mentioning, you were just mentioning construction. And so I'm wondering about, you know, they're the biggest equipment rental company in North America. I think they might even be the world now. I know they're expanding out of North America. But I just pulled up that price and consensus chart. It's not as bullish on the earnings growth side. That looks a little bit smaller earnings growth. Shares have been at this new high, though, and are still fairly cheap. But if an investor's seeing a chart like this one, a lot of them look like this. The Owens Corning one, at least on the share price, look like this too. But what do we do? Do we wait for a pullback in a stock like this? So far, we haven't really had one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way we get a pullback is a creeping one. You know, what's happening in the 10-year that can get the thing to roll over on a 10-year rise is, you know, the market will slowly price down the number of rate cuts incrementally over time, and you slowly rise the 10-year at 3-4 now, get to 5, you know, 60 basis points, 10 a month, right? It might take us 6 months. But look, when we get to, you know, SEP, and, you know, again, the market's going to look forward. The market thinks it's going to get 3 rate cuts this year. Now, SEP would mean 2 would have to be done by then. If none are done by SEP, you know, the market's going to be at 4.9, right, in the 10-year. And we're going to find out in a hurry from the Federal Reserve. You know, you got a May 1 meeting, then you've got a June meeting, and then you're in, you know, to September. They got to do 2 cuts in those 3 meetings for this whole thing to play out. And if it doesn't, 10-year's going up.
Yeah.
I mean, again, just think ahead, realize how this is going to work. And all the, if it just doesn't happen because it doesn't happen, the Fed runs through their data and doesn't do it, the market on the Fed futures and the CME, you know, markets will just immediately reprice it.
Yeah, I just brought up the chart for Eaton, ticker ETN, and that's another hot one. I consider it to be an old economy. Like, I've always loved these kinds of companies, but the stocks have always lagged until 2023, but now 2024. But look at the earnings growth expected on this one, too. This is actually one of the better price and consensus charts I've seen, with like very nice earnings growth.
Yeah, well, this is, again, you got to understand, again, legal immigration for all this construction, great news for them, right, frankly. Who needs construction workers? Where do these people come from? What do they do? They're most equipped for construction. And so that's like, you know, again, just from an employer perspective, that's a good news thing. And then you say to yourself, 2 million extra job openings, hot market, a lot of in need for, you know, people to put up CapEx and things like this. I mean, the other thing that's happening when we get back to Goldman's, you know, rising potential GDP, not a huge number, 2.5 versus 2.1. But what happens here in, again, from a supply chain perspective, is we forget we shut the economy down and reopened supply chains. First, we had all these shortages. Now, though, every person who opened a store or opened a factory or opened anything reset it, reinvested in it, re-cleaned it up, and there's been a productivity boom, right? And so groups that are in these, you know, the Eatons and all these types of groups are URIs. They're either supplying the construction to make that new thing, or they're actually inside these things and helping the productivity go up in an employee shortage economy. So it's been the spot. I mean, I threw out AIRR, ticker AIRR, as, you know, the mid-cap industrial name that I liked, and it's up 40% recently.
AIRR?
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. AIRR.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. 49% growth in a year. Like, it's just been crazy how strong this damn thing is.
Yeah. Who would have thought that?
Yeah.
Look at all these building ones. Obviously, the home builder, that's been surging.
Invesco Building Construction ETF, yeah, PKB, 68.5.
Yeah.
Spider Home Builder, SHB, 69. I mean, Invesco Dorsey Wright Industrials, PRN, ticker 57.
Right.
I mean, again, these markets are ETFs are, you know, pretty small. Spider Homebrew is that big at 2 billion, but you know,
yeah.
Look at this AIR. It's only an 874 million, but you know, I got people in it, and I got myself in it. And the thing is,
yeah, like, you know, not many people are still, even though these stocks are breaking out, they're not in it. They're all in tech.
They're not in it. Yeah, you can see the market caps. Nobody's in this stuff, right?
They're, is that bullish? Do you consider that?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Like, this is the problem here, is what's the next leg? Look right here, you get SHLD Global X Defense Tech. Not moving much yet. What happens when we get a Ukraine package passed, right? Or we get a big blow up or more alliances form? Maybe that's where you go. Maybe it's into defense tech. Palantir, things like that. I mean, drone making. I mean, there's still a lot of geopolitical issues out there and a lot of investment going on in defense tech. But this has been in my area that I've pointed out to people it's been really good and certainly above the S&Ps.
Yeah. I just pulled up real quick because I was curious, the technology ETFs, to kind of see what's similar. Not surprising, the semiconductor ETF is up 77.6%.
Yeah.
And a few of these other ones are pretty good up there too. So you're not doing too bad. What do you think about the tech companies right now? Like, you know, taking a look at like NVIDIA's chart right now, I'm going to pull up the price and consensus chart for that one because, you know, so many people are in it or they missed it and they're kind of waiting on the sidelines to see if maybe they can get it on a pullback. But I just pulled up the price and consensus chart and, you know, 2024 and 2025 earnings estimates still looking really hot. They're still going up.
Well, here's another interesting thing to notice again, back to the industrial turn up stock market. It was that mid June year, when, you know, basically NVIDIA got cranked up. So again, what happens here, NVIDIA goes into rack servers go into data centers got to be constructed.
Right.
So there is a low-tech construction boom that comes with this whole thing.
Yeah.
Is it done? You know, the thing that's interesting here from that chart perspective is there was kind of a plateau from June to like January of 2024. I think there may be another six-month, you know, sideways movement in NVIDIA playing out maybe till post-election and next year. Maybe this year's over, but we get another surge on – again, on that 2020, you know, 5 and 6 forward look on the next level of this whole thing. But it might be, you know, I would bet more on a consolidation phase, not a down phase, but on a sideways movement around 900 for 6 to 10 months as one of my scenarios. I mean, there's going to be many, but I would certainly have one being what you see in that June to January period where you just go sideways.
Yeah. What do you think about Apple? That's getting a lot of angst out there. Everybody owns this one as well. You can see, I just pulled up the price consensus. That doesn't look too terrible, but the stock itself is not going anywhere.
Yeah, 160 in early 2022, and you're basically at 170 now. So you're making an interest payment in, you know, 6, 8, 10% on a stock like this, which is basically, by the way, pretty much what they're growing their earnings. It's, you know, it's a giant company, and they don't have markets that they can deliver big upside to anymore. And also, frankly, you know, a lot of the iPhones are super expensive, and you know, there's only so much discretionary income out there. So, you know, Apple, like people again threw out the Mag 7, but I've been telling people on our shows I do that it's really just NVIDIA, and that's really kicking butt. The ones are basically not. I mean, Amazon and Meta are just basically rode up to their previous highs, right?
Yeah, I think, let's see, Meta.
Microsoft's good. Or Meta, go to the Meta, yeah, see what Meta does.
I feel like there's the Meta chart. So it is at new highs. And we do see the earnings growth looks pretty good here too.
Yeah, they're at a $500 stock. I mean, again, it, a lot of what happened for 2 years, it went nowhere to 350, went from 350 to 350, now went up $150.
Yeah.
Over those 2.5 years. So again, 10% of 350 is 35. So doing 40% over 3 years is like 15, 20%, you know, not like so great, right? If you just wrote it out, you made 15 to 20% a year on Meta, which is good. But, you know, to really nail it down, you had to come in at the lows and the 100 and ride it to 500. But if you look at the chart over time, you know, basically, you know, again, 350 in early late 2021, you know, $35 a share, two, three years later, you'd have been at 420, 430. That's 10%, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's impressive as a momentum stock. It's impressive that Zuckerberg got focused on profitability. That's what turned it around. And it's impressive because there is a lot of, you know, rejuvenation of the advertising and social media channels out there.
So it sounds like you're kind of a bear on the Mag 7, other than NVIDIA.
Yeah, at this point, I'm not bearish. And I'm just thinking, you know, you're going to get some consolidation here after this momentum. And then also people are forgetting there's some really mature, like Tesla is, you know, getting hammered. At $3 a share in earnings for a lot of people next year, that's nothing for a $170 stock to make $3 a share. You got a 50 PE. It talked a lot of hype up about that. Then you've got, you know, pull up Amazon, ticker AMZN. Let's see what that one looks like.
That's a good question because they did a lot of, you know, cost cutting as well.
Yeah.
In the prior 18 months or so. Here we go.
Yeah. So Amazon, a little, you know, fully valued at 2025, like we've seen a lot of times. Big momentum run. But effectively, again, if you bought it late 2021 at 160, now you're at 180. So a lot of what gets people excited about this stock is that run for over the last 18 months. But in truth, if you just were a holder of this thing for the last 3-4 years, it'd make a lot of money. Because they were COVID-driven, again, big run-up. So again, let's talk about that run-up from 90 to 160. And they stalled out for, I mean, one could argue for the next 5 years, 3, 4, 5 years, right?
Right.
So, I mean, a lot of this
hasn't been that great over this period.
Yeah, it's another one of these things where who's telling the narrative, right? And if you get too time constrained, you know, over the month of the days, you think, oh, this is kicking butt. But really, it's a mature company that reposting prior highs that were seen 2.5, 3 years ago.
Right.
You know, again, that has been the market, and it's a solid part of the market weight S&P, and it's good news for all of us. But no, don't oversell what's going on here, right? Block is a good one. You pulled that one up. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to pull up Block, ticker SQ, and ask you about this one, because the shares sold off in 2022 in the big sell-off of all the growth stocks, and they've gone nowhere since then. Just in this narrow trading range. But look at the earnings. The earnings have gone crazy.
You know what it is? I looked into this. This is Cash App. They own Cash App. 43% of Block's earnings are Cash App, and Cash App is basically a Bitcoin trade.
Oh, okay. But so they're able to make money off of it, it looks like.
They make money on Bitcoin. So Bitcoin went up, and Block went up through its afterpay. So this ended up being a Bitcoin trade in the last, you know, 4 or 5 months. And you can see where those estimate revisions come up.
Yeah.
Bitcoin started running basically, you know, October-ish. And that's where those things lift off. Because what you find out is they allow Bitcoin transactions on Afterpay. So if Bitcoin price goes up, the nominal value of those transactions go up. They make money, more money on Afterpay or Cash App. I'm sorry. So.
But why is the stock mired down there under $100? Why can't the stock itself break out?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I mean, again, you're looking at a stock that does $70 a share. The earnings, yeah, you wonder. I mean,
yeah, this looks like a deal.
It does, but you know, this is where you know the Cathie Wood thing also gets totally screwed up. The shorts went in and pounded this thing in 2022. And now the short game is to range trade the thing with shorter term short positions going, you know, short it from 100 back to 50 or maybe, you know, 80 to 40 or whatever that pattern is there. So So, yeah, it's a stock that's gotten held hostage by this sort of range trading, you know, short covering thing.
Yeah, maybe.
And again, you got to figure out when it blows up and takes off. It's an opportunity here. But again, I've seen these charts go off like sideways for a year more, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, it is what it is. And I don't like that a lot of that estimate revision is Bitcoin related, because if Bitcoin sells off, those estimate revisions come down. So the other problem here is, again, why this is not moving up on the Bitcoin story is if that is ephemeral, if that is transient, if that is transitory, why should I price it in? So what this is telling you, this chart's telling you, is the other thing it starts telling you is the Bitcoin thing's transient, right?
Right. Really, it is definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. And already we're seeing a 25.5 going to back off lately. Look at those, that estimate down. That's almost certainly just pricing down the pullback in Bitcoin. Right. So, yeah, I mean, this is one where I'm like, yeah, right. I mean, there's too many technologies that can come out of AI here that could just bury block. I mean, I'd be more worried about a simplistic app like this than anything else with AI, man. I mean, I can get somebody with some intelligent app services tied to my block thing and, you know, I'm going to beat you.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the street is not believing that those earnings estimates are going to be legit, because it's too big of a disconnect. At some point, the street would be like, you know, this is dirt cheap. We all got to be in it, but they're not. So they're not believing those earnings estimates.
Yeah, they're just saying it's going to be transient. You know, it's going to pop up and spike, and these analysts are going to cut their estimates, and this is not going to be what you think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's entirely correct. I wouldn't dispute that argument.
Okay. Anything else we need to know that we should be watching out for over the next couple of months with the economy here?
Well, we got to watch out for a summer concerning thing that nobody sees. Again, we've got a lot of geopolitics that can front run the election. And you know, there's a lot of groups that want the incumbent administration out of power around the world. And we've never seen this before where, you know, groups like Russia and China actively push to get rid of somebody in the United States who's in power. We haven't seen this before. I mean, we've seen it in part in 2016 and 2020, but we're in 2024 and they're getting more sophisticated. They get more frontward looking. Entirely possible that we get some kind of pre-event in front of the election that starts up in the summer and it gets chaotic. I don't know what that is. You know, they're not going to tell me. Not these security intelligence and cyber groups, but that's, you know, big cyber attack, you know, in the United States or, you know, something like that, that really disrupts the economy to take down Biden. It's entirely possible.
Okay. So you're looking for some kind of black swan event.
Yeah. I mean, I just think, you know, I've just been amazed by just how, you know, geopolitical situations. You have so many meetings of alliances, of new alliances, new defense alliances, new wars. I mean, we're in an active conflict period, and we haven't seen it for 30 years at least. And we need to, you know, we're all kind of lulled to sleep because we're in the United States and we're not getting hammered by it. But I think if I were out in the world, I'd have a little better perspective, or at least a different one.
Okay. We'll be on alert for any kind of event, and I'm sure I'll have you back on to talk about it if it happens. So let me recap some of the stocks we talked about on this episode. There was Owens Corning. We haven't talked about them in a long time. Ticker OC. United Rentals, ticker URI. Eaton, we talked about them. I don't think we've ever talked about Eaton either, or it's been a long time. Ticker E as in Edward, T as in Tom, N as in Nancy, ETN. Then, of course, there were some of the Mag 7 that we talked about. NVIDIA, ticker NVDA, Apple, AAPL, Meta, META, and we finish it up with Block, the mysterious Block that could be a value play here, ticker SQ, still on Block, S as in Sam, Q. And as always, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. You can get all of our video podcasts on YouTube. Just go to Zacks.com/YouTube to find our page. Subscribe over there and you'll get all of the Market Edge video podcasts. But you can also get us on Apple. We're on Spotify. We're on Amazon Music. Anywhere you can get podcasts, but be sure to get us. And I'll see you again next week with some more stocks.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute, an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.